time now for Solving the World's Problems, and farmer and rural commentator Steve Wynn Harris is keen to look at biodiversity on the farm. He says farmers are often criticised for their monocultures, but when you have a poke about, it's a lot more diverse than one might expect. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Karen, how are you? It's a pleasure talking to you. It's a bit like your previous correspondent. It's almost like you bookend my life because I was a teenager watching radio with pictures, and now I fall asleep listening to Lately, and that's not a reflection on your show. It's just how tired I am at that time of the day.
Oh, that's good. Well, good and bad. It's obviously a big, long day for you. So out there on the farm, what have you been poking around in?
Well, we get a bit of stick because, you know, they talk about pastoral monocultures. Ryegrass clover is our standard pasture. And in fact, I would prefer if all my pastures were just ryegrass and white clover, because it's a great mix where the clover is supplying the nitrogen from the air, the free nitrogen, and the ryegrass is taking that nitrogen up. And that pretty well is our competitive advantage with the rest of the world. But sadly, my pastures aren't as clean as that. And stung by sort of criticism of this pastoral monoculture thing, I had a look, poke around my pastures, and there's a bit of a list here. I could find Coxfoot, Poa, Browntop, Sweet Vernal, Timothy, Pastbellum, Yorkshire Fog, Tall Fescue, Barley Grass, Crested Dogsdale, Presta, Prairie Grass, Danthonia, and the several I couldn't identify. So that's just the grasses, Karen.
You'd have to go a bit slower than that on those grasses. Are they grasses that you've planted yourself?
I've dabbled with some of those in the past because we were looking for alternatives. You know, some of them are better suited to dry land. But no, most of them are just, you know, volunteer grasses that have snuck through the system and are out there. But, you know, we've also got different clovers. We use the white clover, of course, but subterranean and suckling clover, a bit of red, and a couple of the others. So they're the ones that are fixing the nitrogen. So there's several varieties of clover. But then you start looking elsewhere and you think, well, crikey, there's a lot of weeds in these pastures too. And here's another list for you, Karen. Shepherd's purse, spurry, dock, buttercup, dandelion, chickweed, storksbill, fat hen, pennyroyal, speedwell, yarrow, hedge mustard, and a bit of fumitory. So these pastures are a bit more diverse than they might appear from the side of the road.
Nothing wrong with a bit of fumitory.
What do you use that for?
No idea. What eats this grass, or do you just have it for the soil, or is it just what's on your farm?
You know, the stock graze it. The sheep are more selective when they'll you know target the clovers because they're much more palatable, and also very nutritious. The cattle are a little less selective. You know, they wrap their tongue around the grass. The sheep are sort of nibbling away with their teeth. So the cattle we use as sort of pasture conditioners, and they eat a lot of these things and clean them up. But that was just the pastures. And, of course, there's all the other horrible weeds like thistles. You know, I've got Scotch thistle, nodding wing, Californian, Mars thistles and a couple of other things. And then you start looking around at the trees. And on this place, we've been planting trees furiously for 50 or 60 years. And there's several hundred varieties of trees just on our property alone. And that includes natives as well as exotic trees. And that sort of planting is happening all over the country. So then we look at all the birds we've got. You know, I've counted about 50 or 60 different species here, which includes about 10 or a dozen native species. And our creeks have tuna and kura, which is freshwater crayfish and snails and some of the cockabullies and native fish. So there's quite a big variety, you know, swimming in the rivers as well. So I guess the message is we're not as much of a monoculture as people might portray us or might think. The place is teeming with life. And this is fairly relevant because at the moment they've just finished a consultation on the Aotearoa biodiversity strategy, and they're developing that strategy now, looking at biodiversity within this great nation that we live in.
But don't people mean when they say monoculture, they mean that you've just got cows or sheep on a big area of land? They don't really get right down to what grasses you have and how many birds are coming onto the property, do they?
Well, I mean, I'm here to advocate for my sector, Karen, so I'm painting a good picture of the number of species that we've got out there, many hundreds, thousands of different species. And yes, cows and sheep are some of those. So, that is the point. I mean, I'm a sheep and beef farmer, so I have both cattle and sheep. Dairy farmers, of course, that just have the dairy cows. You know, we're in a sector that's changing rapidly due to what we now know about the waterways and what we've got to do in terms of the land and the environment, and it's finding that balance between remaining productive and profitable and generating export earnings for the country and also looking after the environment at the same time. So, you know, we're on a learning path and are making great changes, as the cities have to do, you know, with the infrastructure there, which needs fixing up.
People who criticise farmers say that there's not enough farmers who are doing this, and by the sound of it, your waterways are in, you know, that they seem to be sound with what you've got in them. But many, it's about water, isn't it, and the quality of water.
Yes, water's been a big issue. You know, again, a lot of this ignorance from 20, 30, 40 years ago. We've learned a lot in recent years. We've adapted and changed. I mean, we've been, you know, under the hammer and you know, criticism and some of that, quite fair enough. So we can't make these changes overnight, but we are making them because we have to, either we want to, a mixture of we want to and we need to, and also we have to through legislation. So, you know, the waterways are going to continue to improve. They need to, and we acknowledge that, and, you know, we will get there. So, but I guess, you know, your urban audience just has to understand that it can't happen overnight, even though they would like it to.
And what about the amount of land that is used for, let's say, rearing cattle, when those who oppose the rearing of cattle and sheep, so let's say vegetarians or vegans, they say that you could use the land in a better way and produce more?
Yeah, it's a good question. Except, you know, I'm here in Central Hawke's Bay, not far from Waipakaro, and I'm on hill country, dryland hill country, and other than pine trees, honestly, there's very other few uses that we could do on this country other than ruminants, sheep and cattle. It's not suitable for cropping, it's dry land, there's no water, it gets very dry in the summer, very wet in the winter, so it has its limitations in terms of, I mean, if I could grow more profitable crops and things, I would be doing it. But this is what I do, and I have to live within the constraints that nature offers me.
How many acres have you got, Steve, or hectares, as they say these days?
They do say that these days, Karen. It's about 365 hectares, which is about 950 acres, and I run that on my own with a little bit of casual work, and that would be round about average nowadays. So, yeah, we are more stretched than we once were. There's a lot fewer of us farming bigger areas. And again, that's just a financial pressure and consideration over time. Hey, I've got a good news story to finish about farming. So it was announced overnight. I'm not sure if RNZ has run this, but Dick and Gillian Jardine, they farm the Remarkable Station down there in the Whakatipu Basin. They've gifted, not only covenanted, 900 hectares of freehold land to the QE2 Trust, which is an extremely generous gesture. It's all that land, if you're standing at Queenstown and you look across the airport into the Remarkables, it's the lower land below that, and it runs right down to the lake. And that's an amazing gift, 900 hectares of freehold land.
Yeah.
Incredibly generous.
That is. I can see it right now, as you said. I can see exactly where it is. Gee, that is a good news story. Well, I was going to say, too, no wonder you're exhausted at 11 o'clock at night if you've got... What did you say? 960 acres.
Yeah, you don't hold it against me then for just drifting off. I try to listen. I try to keep awake, but next thing I know, I'm listening to the all-night program and I turn the radio off.
You drift off whenever you like, Steve. You deserve it. Fantastic talking to you this afternoon.
Yeah, and you too, Karen. Thank you.